Hello everybody and welcome back inside the Shark Tank for a midweek episode of the podcast. Much like the Premiership Rugby Cup, we've moved away from the weekend schedule and we're now doing podcasts on a Wednesday morning. My name is Lewis and joining me to discuss the Sale Prem Rugby Cup triumphs over the last couple of weeks are my co-hosts Alex and James. Alex, how are you going?
Yeah, very good, thanks, mate. I mean, it's hard not to be pretty happy as a Sale fan at the moment. We're 4-4, so what more can you ask for, really? All good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. You know, like you said, the first team's doing the business, the academy team and like the backup players are doing the business. It's been a very encouraging start to the season. James, obviously, Premier Rugby Cup, the best way of watching some of those highly touted Sale Academy prospects. How have you found the last couple of weeks?
Quite strange, really. The fact that it's happening in midweek. You know, there's no more kind of A-team Jets games on Monday nights, so you can see what the Premiership Rugby are trying to do here, really. They're trying to have this as a development competition midweek. And by having it midweek, of course, it means that, you know, head coaches are unlikely to risk even their squad players who might be needed for the 23. So it really does mean that this is a development competition. I'm kind of in two minds about it because it then withdraws really the availability of these players to play National League or Championship rugby. So I think that the jury is out as to what's better for their development, frankly. But you know, overall, Sale to be 2-2. We're firmly at the top of the our group for Premiership Rugby Cup, and we're back in the mix for it.
Absolutely. So we're going to kick things off today with just a brief chat on those two Premiership Rugby Cup games. So Sale, as James mentioned, currently top of Pool B. And just as a quick recap on the format for this year, basically, there are three pools, one pool with five teams, the other two with four teams. The idea being that each team will play a total of five games, I believe, in terms of the round-robin setup. After that, the winners of each pool will go on to play each other in the semi-finals, being joined by the best-placed runner-up. So for Sale to be 2-2 so far, it's not necessarily a guarantee that they're on the way. Already, you know, obviously in previous years, I think the Premier Rugby Cup only had three games as part of their pool stage. But as it stands, Sale are in a very good place to progress, if not as the Pool B winners, as one of the better placed runners up. So let's just chat a little bit about it. So Sale, first game in this competition last Tuesday, beat Leicester 25-19 at home, and they followed that up last night with a win away at Newcastle by 29-21. Alex, I guess maybe we could probably sort of touch upon these games in equal measure, but from what you've seen, has anyone really kind of stood out, or has anything stood out to you from those two quite impressive performances from Sale?
Yeah, so I was at the Leicester game at the AJ Bell on the Tuesday, and full disclosure, I haven't actually seen the Newcastle game on the basis that we're recording this on Wednesday morning and it happened on Tuesday night with no coverage anywhere across any sort of TV channel.
Or Premiership-owned streaming services, which I learned today does not cover the Premiership Rugby Cup.
I mean, you can still get the full match on Prem Rugby Video after the event, so I'll watch that later, but it takes a pretty diehard fan to watch a full match from the Premier Rugby Cup, doesn't it? I think, listen, the performance against Leicester especially, and Newcastle to an extent, we had the much better team, or the much more experienced team, maybe is the better way of putting it. And as a result, we probably should have won both games pretty comfortably. Now, obviously, we did win both games, so, you know, I'm not not disappointed, but I think it was a bit of a shock to the system for a lot of those players to come up against some very good young outfits of Leicester and Newcastle and probably more cohesive teams who played together more. Whereas we sort of had this quite interesting mix of senior players like Don Barrow and, you know, the likes of Matt Postlethwaite, who are pretty regularly in and around the Sale 23. And then, you know, genuine academy prospects coming through in the same time. Ethan Kane, who, you know, we haven't really seen in the Sale 23, that kind of thing. So I don't think it quite worked for Sale. Obviously, it worked fundamentally because we got the results. But there was a bit of disjointedness. And, you know, let's face it, these are games that on paper we should have won based on the quality and experience of our team against the other teams. That said, I think we've seen what the Premier Rugby Cup is there for, which is some exciting performances from kind of the next generation of talent who will be seen in the Sale squad in the next few years. And I thought, I tweeted this after the Leicester game, but Nye Thomas was really impressive. Sam Dugdale, I think, in both games has been really impressive, and he's definitely pushing to, you know, get back into that first team Sale squad, really, isn't he? Captain the side on last night against Newcastle. So there's been individual performances that have kind of reinforced what the Premier Rugby Cup is there for, and we'll talk about others. And it's been good to see the likes of, you know, Elliot Gourlay, who's played for Colby last season a lot, and coming into a Sale squad. I think, you know, it's interesting to see how we approach the rest of the competition, because it's definitely been a feature of it that we've gone with a bit of a mixed team that isn't very cohesive, and we've sort of ended up not sneaking wins, but it's not been comfortable by any means against more cohesive teams. So it's whether we then go into a proper academy side for the last two games, especially given the strong start, or whether we continue what we're doing and we sort of take that through the competition. But as I say, listen, two wins out of two, you literally cannot complain. And I think there's people in that squad who are pushing for getting into the Sale 23 towards the end of the season, which is exactly what it's for. But yeah, you picked Nye Thomas, I think, didn't you? One of us picked Nye Thomas as one to watch, and he was superb against Leicester. Joe Carpenter as well, who we also picked out, had a really, really good game against Leicester. He looked really good in the air, actually, which has always been the kind of, is he going to be strong enough in the air? And he had some great takes in that Leicester game. So, yeah, I think it's a really positive outcome. Obviously, top of the table, only team in our pool with two wins out of two. There's a bit of a decision to be made further down the line, but we go off this competition for a couple of weeks now anyway, don't we? So there's plenty of time. But yeah, I think it's served its purpose. And as you say, we've put ourselves in a really good position to get into the semi-finals and potentially have another run at this trophy, which would be a great result this season, I think.
Yeah, and apologies to the listeners. I misspoke earlier. There's actually five rounds of matches, but each team will actually only play four matches total just because of how the pools have been sorted. So actually, Sale are, as it stands, halfway through their pool stage. And obviously, two wins out of two has put us in a very strong place to kind of kick on. And I guess, James, that kind of brings me to you in terms of, you know, what have you seen, you know, from those two performances or the players that have been featuring, et cetera, that you think is notable, you know, from those first two game weeks?
Well, I think that Sam Dugdale's been mentioned, and I think he's somebody who played a lot last season, especially at the beginning of the season before he got injured, because we were without the Dupreez because they're off for South Africa. He hasn't had this opportunity this year, and so he's having to fight his way into the 23 in a slightly different way. And that's what we want to see. And if he's bringing those performances to the training paddock in Carrington, that will be raising the level of the first team. So it really is linked in that way. I think Joe Carpenter, I think, had a good game, as Alex said. Interesting that he didn't play last night against Newcastle, which might suggest that Luke James's injury that he limped off with is significant enough for him not to be available. We haven't heard anything from the club, but that's what it would suggest, that Carpenter's been held back. And that's what we want to see. Next cab off the rank. You know, it could be quite easy to put McGuigan at 15 or Sam James at 15, maybe, you know, and have a little shift around in the back line, just bringing in the specialist 15 and saying, right, you know, here's your opportunity. Like we did with Mike Haley. I remember we plucked him almost out of absolutely nowhere to start a couple of games. And then, you know, you sort of get bedded in. I think there's some question marks over the pack. Honestly, having watched the Leicester game, I think we put out a, you know, more experienced pack, and I include someone like Doug Dell in this, Don Barrow, Matt Postlethwaite, Alex Groves played yesterday against Newcastle, someone like Ben Carlisle, who's that kind, he's sort of been around the club now for some time, brought, I think he came over in 2018, 2019, and, you know, hasn't really massively kicked on to, I mean, look, that loose head's a tough position to get in the Sale squad, for sure, because, you know, you've got Bevan Rod suddenly appears from nowhere, and that makes things difficult. But you'd have expected, I think, to give the backs more clean, dominant ball than they have been doing. There's been, you know, certainly in the Leicester game, some mistakes, you know, especially from the pack, carrying the ball into contact, knock-ons, things like that. Discipline has been poor. You know, I think our discipline in the first three games of the first two games of the Premiership season has actually been pretty good compared to last year. Don't forget, discipline was one of the main areas that we got killed last year, and where we did, why we didn't reach top four. So there was a bit of a worry last night that we kind of had two cards. A lot of penalties, which their 9 and 10 were knocking over. And that just meant that, you know, we had to work that much harder to score tries to win the game, frankly, last night. We managed to do it. I think there's some, maybe some question marks over some backup forwards. You know, let's hope that the cohesiveness, because that is important, set piece. You know, scrum line out, it is really, really important to play together regularly, right? So Ethan Kane's thrown into people that, you know, he's never thrown into before. You know, that is that. And then there's lifters that aren't used to lifting the people they're lifting. So it really does make a difference. So I'm not, absolutely, this is not a write-off, but we have to be honest that I think, especially against that Falcons pack, really, when you've got a second row of Groves and Barrow, Postlethwaite at six, Doug Dale at seven, you know, Joe Jones at three. You know, these are people with Premiership experience, and I think we should have been more dominant.
I'm glad you mentioned Matt Postlethwaite, because that was the one interesting. Well, I mean, it's not the one interesting. There's been plenty of interesting positional selections, but the fact that we saw Postlethwaite line up at six, you know, last night, which we've never seen before in a Sale shirt, I thought was quite interesting. And obviously, you know, there are a few names here as well who appear to have been drafted in from, you know, from other academies or been sort of brought forward. So, you know, from the academy ranks well ahead of time. So it is interesting in that the lack of cohesion potentially that we have seen is maybe to be understood. Sale do operate with quite a small squad in terms of first team players, and little nuances like seeing a possible player at six aren't necessarily to be too much of a surprise. But I guess maybe to focus on some of the more exciting elements, we've obviously been talking a lot about Kieran Wilkinson and Tom Curtis over the last couple of months. And obviously last night, you know, we saw Wilkinson and Curtis start as a 10-12 tandem, obviously against Leicester the previous week. Curtis came on for Sam Hill midway through the second half. And I guess, James, from your perspective, you know, what have you made of Wilco and Curtis's performances so far? Because they were two players who certainly had the spotlight on them coming into this group of fixtures.
I think it's probably confirmed what we already know, which is they're both talented, very talented individuals. Kieran Wilkinson's weakness is his kicking at goal, which is what we saw against Leicester. So a couple that maybe he felt he could have got, and that he's much more of a confidence player. That's maybe his confidence is a bit lower than Curtis's at the moment, but still has a huge amount of talent. I think he, you know, he's a really good ball player, right? Seriously good ball player. But you know, at this level, you know, unless you are carrying a Ben Spencer in your squad or something, you have to kick goals at 10. And that's always been this question mark, and it's still there. But is he going to be a Premiership quality ball player? Absolutely. I think he probably already is. He could rock up and replace Finn Smith at Worcester tomorrow and be a Premiership fly-off, in my opinion, with the right setup and the right confidence of the coaching staff. But can he kick a goal at 75 to 85%? Not sure. Tom Curtis, I think, could. He did miss one yesterday, or missed a couple yesterday, but, you know, I haven't seen how difficult they were. but generally he's a more reliable kicker. He kicked when he was in Australia. He's been kicking, he's always kicked instead of Wilkinson all through the age groups because they've played together in this setup. What I would say is, and this might link with the pack not being quite as dominant, is with having Bedloe or Pope at 13, you really are lacking somebody to get us over the gain line in this team. Because Tom Curtis and Wilkinson together, they have some pace off the mark. Don't get me wrong. Curtis is a lot stronger than he looks as well. But they're not going to be boshing themselves over the opposition seven. So I think that there's a balance issue maybe in this team. But, look, it's making them play a different way, which isn't a bad thing. Someone like Bedloe and Pope, they do need to kick on and find out what type of centre that they're going to be. I think the other thing that I just flagged as well is a couple of lads from Sale FC made this setup as well. They're not even in the Academy or Sharks squad, Cal Morris and Sami Adu. So I'll be interested to see the playback on that and actually see how they got on at this level and whether it really is a step up. That's what I'm really genuinely interested in. Is this a step up from going to play really experienced adults? And I think in the backs maybe in the backs, because you're playing against other backs that are probably in age group rugby, international level. So I think that is probably a step up from something they're used to. But in the forward pack, Ben Carlisle, you probably want him propping against some 30-year-old monster from Cornish Pirates every week rather than a kind of, 21-year-old lad from Morpeth or something. Do you know what I mean? So I think this, as I said at the beginning, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but the jury is still out for me on this competition generally. The clubs like it because they can start seeing match, who plays well together, the next level, and start. So when matchups come in back into the first team, they're already kind of set. The nine is used to feeding the 10 and finding the 10. The two is used to hitting the person in the line. So I completely get why the clubs like it. But is it actually the best for the player development? I'm not 100% sure.
I guess maybe, Alex, unless you guys have anything sort of else to mention on the PRC. The one final thing I wanted to touch upon was we spoke a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, about who might feature for Sale as part of this setup or who might not. And I'm interested to get your thoughts, since you did such a good job earlier talking about who has impressed, are there any players you're surprised to have not seen feature for Sale, particularly when we talk about the fact that they've called up players from Sale FC and elsewhere?
I think I was surprised to see Ashman in the squad the first time round. Sort of surprised not to see, say, Ethan Kane go both games, although obviously he didn't make it. And I think Reuben Birch was a one who I thought would play more. Obviously, he started last night, but he was nowhere to be seen in the Leicester game. I don't know whether there's an injury in that or what, but I think he's one who you feel is quite close to the first team. He spent a lot of time at Sale FC sort of last season before, and it's kind of that time now to kick on into the first team. So for him not to start both games was a bit of a surprise. And other than that, I think, the other obvious choices who you would want in this competition is largely injured, aren't they? Obviously, Sam Hill went off injured and would have been good to get him some fitness in this competition. Conor Doherty, we know, is injured. And then we're in kind of a holding pattern where the likes of Aaron Reid and Tom Roebuck are already in the first team and Rafi Quirk is already in the first team and Gus Waugh is up there. So that, there's not many players who I expected to see loads of. I think it's slightly disappointing not to see maybe some of the really young academy lads that we talked about, Woodman, Matamid, Charlie Wardle even, not even in and around the squad. But it just shows that the Sale FC system we are employing is working because it's bringing through talent who are coming into the Sale setup. So, the reason they've not been involved in these games is because there's been older, more experienced players in that position.
Yeah, I mean, we did see a couple last night. We saw Harry Thompson come off the bench, and also Hugh Davis, who who I think also came off the bench against Leicester as well. In fact, he definitely did. So they're the two really that are from the most recent intake that have made it through to play in the match day 23. And in Hugh Davis's case, he's actually started a couple of games for Sale FC as well. So he's obviously one that the coaching staff feel is more physically ready to make the step up at this stage in their career. Don't forget, there's also like two different types of contracts at the academy level. One is you are full-time in. The other one is you're actually still getting further education and you're training with the squad around. Woodman is one of those people in the latter camp who I think is probably, you know, the potential star coming through. Hugh Davis, you know, captained the really successful Kirkham side, and he's playing at seven, interestingly, for Sale FC and coming off the bench and, you know, for the Sale Sharks in the Premiership Rugby competition, whereas he was playing second row at school or number eight as well. So it just goes to show maybe at this stage in his career, seven is the right way, which is also similar to what happened with Sam Dugdale. I mean, he played most of his, you know, age group rugby at eight. And now he's playing his senior rugby mostly at seven. Maybe once he gets into his latter 20s and he naturally fills out a bit more, Sam Dugdale, because he's pretty big lad now, but like as he fills out even more, he probably might move back to be an eight. So what I really enjoy seeing is how people sort of adapt to being at a different level of rugby and a different age group in rugby. And someone like Charlie Wardle is absolutely smashing it as a 10, as a sort of under 16, under 17 level. I imagine he might come through more as a 15 later on. So, yeah, it's really, really interesting to see how these players are coming through. And it's been good to see some of them. The important thing is we've got two wins under the belt. We're definitely in this competition now, which means that there might be some interesting selection decisions as we come towards the latter part of this. Because if we've got a real chance of getting into semi-final, final, then, you know, we'll start prioritising it more.
So I think that probably does us for the Premiership Rugby Cup. As it stands, Sale are in a good position. They play again away at Wasps in a couple of weeks' time in mid-October, and we'll obviously catch up on that competition then. So parking that discussion, one thing we did want to touch on before we move on to the preview of the Exeter game in the actual Premiership this weekend, is obviously just on what's happening at Worcester and by extension, Wasps. Worcester obviously announcing that they've called in the administrators earlier this week. And, you know, we won't spend too much time on it because obviously it's a fluid situation, things change, etc. But I guess, Alex, obviously Worcester are a club with a lot of connections to Sale with Diamond and a couple of our longer tenured players going there this year. But, you know, what's been your thoughts on the Worcester situation and kind of where does rugby go from here?
Yeah, it's the game is in a serious sort of crisis mode, isn't it, I think? And it's just, fundamentally, it's really sad. It is very sad to see a club like Worcester end up in this position from a relative position of strength as well. You know, I think what's interesting on the Wasp situation is they did take a massive risk in moving to Coventry, and what's kind of come to bite them is that they haven't been able to repay the borrowings they took out to fund the stadium acquisition in time. And that's understandable with COVID. You know, that is, you know, the crowds have been down, takings have been down, and fundamentally they just had a really big risk at the wrong time. With Worcester, I think it's a more sort of, you struggle to understand how the club's got to that position because it was left in such a strong place by previous ownership. And it's just, there's a lot of discussion around the owners and what they're doing. And I think I'm reluctant to kind of say too much because obviously we don't know a lot and you never know what's actually going on behind the scenes. I think the PR around it has been pretty poor. It's been a bad job from the owners. It's not been great from Prem Rugby. You know, I've been following it pretty closely on Twitter and really you're struggling to get any official communications and it's just rumours flying around. So I think it's a massive uncertainty for Worcester fans and staff and players. You know, you've got the caretaker who lives at the ground getting kicked out at 5 p.m. on Monday night. It's just, there's a real human cost to it all. And it's a real issue for, I think the league need to acknowledge how much of an issue this is, because to me, Worcester aren't a one-off. They haven't, you know, the owners might have done some strange and wacky things that people can go, oh yeah, it's really easy to blame the owners. It's really easy to say, yeah, we just had a horrible owner, and as long as we don't have a horrible owner, we're all going to be all right. Fundamentally, the club would be fine if Premiership Rugby and Rugby Union in England at the club level was in a stronger position. But what Prem Rugby have failed to do, and what the clubs have failed to do, it's a joint effort, and I think the RFU as well, is convert that massive Six Nations audience into a club rugby fan base. As such, attendances are woeful. I mean, sales attendances this season have been dreadful so far. They really have. We've had two home games. The first one was 4,000, albeit had been moved because of the Queen dying. And the Premier Rugby Cup game was 1,700, albeit on a Tuesday night. So we haven't really had a proper test of what our attendances is. But still, that's really low numbers for an elite-level sport in England, in a city like Manchester. And I think we have to be realistic about that. That it needs better governance, I think, from the top of the game, and it needs something to be sort, because this isn't going to be, as I say, this isn't a one-off, this isn't bad owner, this is the first domino to fall to me. So it's really concerning, it's really sad, and unless there's some action taken, it's going to be going the same way. And I think we just have to realise how lucky we are at Sale that Simon Orange and Jed Mason are A, very generous, and B, very interested in the development and welfare of the club, and our businessmen who want to run it well. Because if we didn't have their money, we would have gone the same way as Worcester, and I think we'd have gone the same way as Worcester quicker. So yeah, that's my thoughts on it. But yeah, just genuinely, from, it comes back to being really sad for Worcester players, staff, coaches, fans.
I don't want to touch too much on the RFU and Premiership Rugby stuff, because I feel like we could generally sit here for a couple of hours on kind of where all the mistakes are. But it's a really interesting point, which is Worcester fundamentally got to this point for two reasons. Some interesting, let's say, to be polite, business dealings from their current ownership, and obviously the fact that as a club and as a business, they are not self-sufficient without a sort of angel owner or an angel investor or whatever. Unlike, very few clubs are in the league, unfortunately. Maybe Leicester and potentially Exeter are the exceptions to that. But it is really interesting when you sort of think about, okay, well, there's been loans from the Department of Culture and Sport. There's obviously been the influx of money from CBC. And you do wonder, where has that money gone? And if you look at it from a governance perspective, I think the RFU has failed. I think Premiership Rugby has failed. You can argue there are potentially problems with how the money's been looked after from the government and the loans that were given out during the COVID periods and the ability to pay all that back, etc. And obviously as well, there's been failings from Worcester's ownership. But unfortunately, the only people being affected by this are the Worcester fans and the Worcester players and staff. And it is, to your point, really sad. And it brings me on to the question I wanted to ask you, James, which is, we've seen this in other sports to some degree, but do you think there should be a fit and proper ownership test for Premiership Rugby clubs?
Has to be. Absolutely has to be. Because we ain't got many assets to steal. So, you know, steal the academy house and you put the training ground up for development or whatever, and what else is there left? There isn't much, is there? Especially for sale. We don't even own our own stadium. You know, you really are reliant on benefactors being like true and honest. Rugby is in the worst state that in my lifetime. I know that certainly my adult life, because I think when it first became professional, there was a lot of great clubs, especially in the Northwest, actually, that fell by the wayside. That wasn't through poor governance, although there was some examples of that. But it was just because there wasn't a professional structure there to be had. And Sale are still battling with that now. But, you know, with the heads situation where you've got even the most diehard rugby fans, you know, questioning, do I want to play the game anymore? Do I want my children to play the game? You know, lots of unanswered questions there about, are these historical cases just a small period of time between professionalism and massive players and before action was taken to protect players' heads and impact and concussion and all of the rest of it? Or is this something that's still going on now and we're still going to be getting cases in whatever amount of time? So I just think rugby's in a really tricky place and it needs leadership. And we've had loads of conversations on this pod about how Diamond's been treated and all sorts of stuff. I'm afraid both the RFU and Prem Rugby are not fit for purpose and haven't been for a long time. And, you know, I don't have any faith in them leading us out of it. I think we're more reliant on CVC as ever before, really. You know, and it's a worry what the game might become. But if there's not commercial leadership, we're not going to get leadership from people who run the game. So,
and so it is a very worrying situation, which obviously has a massive impact on the Premiership, because as it stands, you know, there's a significant chance that Worcester, you know, well, the club might fold, but also if they do remain, that they'll be relegated. We'll wait to see what happens with Wasps. It might be by the time we get to the end of the season, Premiership Rugby has gone from 13 teams to 11 teams. Just briefly on that as well, since this is a bit of an open pod this week. James, obviously there's a story in the rugby paper about potentially two of the Welsh regions joining Premiership Rugby from next season, potentially to replace Worcester and Wasps. And obviously there's a lot of talk at the moment about, you know, how can Premiership Rugby be restructured to fit a more sustainable business model. Your thoughts on potentially expanding the Premiership across the border into Wales?
Well, if I was the Welsh regions, I'd be absolutely all over this. You know, for them, this solves their commercial problems. And don't forget, the CVC run both competitions. They can see the attendances going on in the United Rugby Championship for Welsh clubs. And it's a very serious situation. Welsh rugby is like really in a bad place. And so if I was them, I'd be absolutely all over this. This is probably a one-off chance to get into English professionalism. How would I structure it? I'm just going to leave this and maybe we'll do it as a bonus pod at some other point. I think there should be two leagues of 10 that are of the same company, whether it's called Premiership Rugby or something else moving forwards. They run the whole professional game and it's two divisions. And that bottom division is protected, whatever you call it, ring-fenced, okay? For a certain period of time, let's say 5 years. If you want to come up from the national leagues, then you have to show that you can have a professional club, basically, and ready to make the step up. I think that then you can have all four Welsh regions in that, two in the top division and two in the second division to start with. But then there's promotion and relegation between those two divisions. It means less games, so it's easier to manage. We could have it so that there's no games going on during international periods, because that is confusing and not fair to clubs who are producing international players. And, you know, I think then you could have two competitive things where getting relegated to the next division probably isn't the worst thing in the world. Then you can have a cup competition across all 20 teams. For the Welsh teams, that's be an absolute saviour, because I'm telling you now, you know, Bristol against Cardiff is going to be a full Cardiff stadium. And so I think that I could see that honestly working. And I don't think it's going to happen. But also I'd say that there should be an RFU mandate within this to say that there needs to be a professional club or, you know, in the majority of the regions of the UK. So there needs to be one in Cornwall. There needs to be one in Yorkshire. There might even need to be one in Kent, for example, or on the south coast somewhere further. Yeah. And that they're your 10 teams. And if Kent's not ready, then actually the RFU should be backing a team in the National League that within 5 years is ready to apply, because it would be ideal to then have two divisions of 12 over a period of time, yeah, over a period of 15, 20 years. And the game needs to plan for this. You know, you look at France. It's just started a fully professional third division. And guess what? The French Rugby Union are directly funding teams in places like Normandy, which has no rugby, because that is an area which currently doesn't have any of the game. So it's directly funding a professional team in Normandy, you know, like Rouen, in the third division. So I think that there's a lot to be done here. I don't run the game. But, you know, you speak to some sensible people, Mark Evans, Steve Diamond, people like this should be brought into a special committee to basically save the game. Yeah. You know, honestly, I really do.
It's so harrowing when you look at what's happening in France versus what's happening in England, and you compare and contrast. I don't want to get too much into it because it's a bit too depressing, but France is doing a very good job at the moment and England less so. Alex, any quick thoughts on Premiership structuring before we talk Exeter at the weekend?
No, I think I'm buying into James's thoughts. So, I'll throw my weight behind him as the new chair of PRL.
Perfect. Well, that's two votes you've now got, James, because I'm fully on board with all your suggestions as well. So let's get back on to on-field matters, at least, and obviously Sale are back in action against Exeter this weekend. And James, just run us through very briefly, you know, what can we expect from Exeter? And we can then talk about what we should expect from Sale.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Exeter, they're undergoing a massive transition. We started to see that last year, right? You know, in the fact that they didn't win anything and actually drops quite significantly down the table in the Premiership. When you actually have a look at the players that have left, it really is a changing of the guard for Exeter. Sam Skinner's gone up to Scotland. Johnny Hill's obviously come to us. Tom Flaherty's obviously come to us. Sean Lonsdale has gone to the Dragons, I think. Don Armand has retired. You know, there's other people like Will Whitty, who came down from Newcastle in a big move, that's moved over to Perpignan in France. So, you know, a lot of these names are people who were there and have been through all of their championships. And it's just that, you know, their journey has sort of come to an end. And they've brought in a lot of new players, but, you know, as normal, as they sort of like, you know, with like Kirsten and some of these others, some real unknowns, you know, like Ruben van Heerden from the Sharks. Okay, you're like, you know, if you're in South Africa, you know him, but otherwise you don't. He's another hard South African guy. And they actually recruit quite heavily from Ireland. They brought in Sean O'Brien last year as a centre. They've got Solomon Akata has come in, who's, well, he's winger really, but they seem to be playing him at 12. Rory O'Loughlin's come in from Leinster, another back. You know, these players that they seem to pick up and then bring through their system. But what can we expect of them in terms of play? Very much the same. Very, very much the same. Really, really hard up front. Strong set piece. Lots of carrying around the fringes. But the ability to move things wide really, really quickly. You know, people like Ollie Woodburn are still doing the Tom O'Flaherty role. They seem to have started the season with Joe Simmons at fullback, but I think that's quite clever because actually Stuart Hogg does play a sort of a secondary distributor role as well as offering some threat, you know, using his pace. And actually Joe Simmons can do that role. And they're backing Harvey Skinner at 10, who looks like a quite a classy little player to me. And let's not be around the bush. They're 3 from 3 as well, Exeter. And that they go to Bristol, I think, tonight. So they could be 4 from 4 as well coming into the weekend. So we're on two form clubs here. You know, the game at the weekend against Harlequins was one of the most outrageous games of rugby I've ever seen. You know, if you actually talk about the product on the pitch, you know, it's better than ever, which is why it's so hard to understand our previous conversation. But, you know, they've got some really cracking players that are, you know, coming through, putting their name down as the next generation. Stu Townsend back from injury is really big for them at 9. You know, Richard Capstick's going really, really well at 8. He's a completely different player to Sam Simmons. You know, he does his basics well. He's a line out forward. He can go up in the air, which Sam Simmons can't. You know, it doesn't really do. And someone like Harry Williams is really finding their form again. You know, he was so probably second choice for England for a long time. Really dropped out of the reckoning, but he's really sort of coming back strong. And Luke Cowan-Dickey back from injury, you know, both him and Jack Yeandale at 2. You know, in terms of the leadership from Hooker in the Premiership, there's not much that can compete with those two. So I think it's going to be a really, really tough game. You know, I traditionally, you feel worried when we play Exeter. You know, I don't think that, you know, we got the best out of them in our matchups last year. Considering that Exeter were a weakened force last year, I don't feel that we kind of felt that going into our games against them. And I don't again now, because they're going to be really, really tough and physical. So from a Sale perspective, we have to be absolutely on it and turn up. You know, our players have had a good rest. We haven't put them out. You know, we had a bye week. So, you know, my question is now back to you guys. How does Sale approach this game? Is there any selection issues that we need to think about?
I think from my perspective, you know, one of the interesting wrinkles is this is a Sale team that historically have tried to go toe-to-toe with Exeter in terms of how we play, you know, very forward-dominated, very physical, like fronting up, as has always been a kind of our primary focus. What we've seen so far from Sale this year, though, has been a little bit looser, a little bit more ambitious in terms of our attack. And I think that's probably the area that we've got to keep going in terms of our priorities. Exeter look ominously, you know, a little bit better than they did last year and look like a return to form. And if that is the case, it's going to be very difficult to, you know, to match them up front. So, you know, with the likes of O'Flaherty, you know, now in the side, with the form that we're seeing from players like Rob Dupree and Sam James, I think the focus has to be, again, you know, continue to keep the ball on the paddock, be very ambitious in attack and look to try and exploit a good Exeter backline, but maybe not necessarily a sort of all-star cast, especially in relation to their forward pack, which, as I mentioned, is looking pretty ominous. This also feels like it's going to be a really key game to see how Johnny Hill elevates our team and our forward pack, you know, not dissimilar as a player to someone like Lou Diaga, but obviously much more experience in the Premiership arena, and obviously he's going to know Exeter's game plan inside and out. So that those are the things that I'm kind of looking for. Can we really sort of take the game to the Exeter backline with the way that we're playing at the moment? And can we see the impact of someone like Johnny Hill in terms of acting as that instigator and that disruptive figure in the middle of a forward pack to kind of slow any momentum that Exeter do end up incurring? What about yourself, Alex? You know, what are you kind of looking for from a Sale perspective from this one?
I think I'm just honestly looking for more of the same that we've seen in the first two Premiership games. And on selection, I think, you know, we've got a winning team and that is playing well. And we're playing an attractive brand of rugby. So I think it's rolling that out again in front of an Exeter team at home who will present a much bigger challenge than Northampton or Bath did. You know, I think there's less pace to worry about in this Exeter team than there is in the Northampton and Bath teams. You know, especially that Northampton team at the end of the game, they were running rings around us. But the physicality is on another level and the intensity is on another level. And fundamentally, the form is just way better. So it's whether we can still, you know, we've seen really strong performances from the likes of Gus Wall, Rob Dupree running the game. As I said, Johnny Hill at Bath, I think, had a really good game. Can they do it against, you know, a better team fundamentally than Bath? Can we play the same way? Can we show the same attacking intent? And then can we be as clinical as we have been so far this season? So that's the real test. And I think it's easy. It's easy to do, but it's going to be so hard to do it 10 minutes in when you're getting battered by Exeter. It's really easy to sort of say, yep, that's how we want to play. But it's going to be a massive test for this team. And I think it's a test of mentality more than anything to go, this is the way we play now. We spin the ball out from nine and we get it wide and we take it into the wide channels. Can we retain the ball? Can we run through Exeter and still physically dominate them? And what happens when they come back at us and, you know, sort of almost suck the life out of the game? So, you know, it's that test of mentality, it's that test of physicality. And hopefully we will pass both. We are at home, which I think is a big advantage. I think we probably should win it. But, yeah, I just really want to see effectively more of the same, but a higher standard against a better level of opposition, I think.
One question I've got for you, James, actually, is, you know, me and Alex have both sort of said we want to play this new style of rugby that we're playing, which maybe works a little bit better against Exeter. To sort of counter some of Exeter's threats, where do you stand on potentially playing both of the Curry brothers? You know, we've not seen them start a game together so far this year. Tom's obviously been in a rest period, a stand down period from England duty. Do you think this is probably the sort of game where you could start with Ben Curry and Tom Curry at 6 and 7, move Jean-Luc Dupree into the second row, and not necessarily fight fire with fire, but employ a game plan which actually is very different to what Exeter are going to come at us with, but it might be equally effective?
100%. I think if you've got Dan Dupree at eight, it gives you that flexibility to play that way because you have him as a line-out forward and a good, competent line-out forward. You know, if we had Sam Simmons, for example, as our number eight, I think that will be a difficult back row to play both Curry brothers. But I think we've underutilised double Curry as a team, to be perfectly honest. And I think that Tom Curry, I think, is actually more of a six now. Actually, you know, I think he's a big lad. He does a lot of the hard yards. You know, he's securing rucks. And Ben is, you know, he's captaining the side at the moment. So I think, you know, that sort of makes him first name on the team sheet. I like the idea of John O'Ross coming off the bench as well. So I'd keep him on the bench because he does provide that element of leadership and, you know, a lot of physicality later in the game. And as someone said, gives him less time to be sent off. So I think, that all works quite well. So I think you're right. I'd go double Curry. I don't think Jean-Luc could be massively happy about it, but I think against Exeter, I think it could work quite well. And against Van Heerden, I think that would be a nice matchup.
Fantastic. So let's do some predictions. Alex, I'll let you go first. It's Sale versus Exeter at home. Well, which way do you think this one's going to go?
I'm feeling confident. I think it's going to be a really tough test against a very good Exeter side who are a bit resurgent. But I still think we've got a confidence and a sort of swagger about us this season that's going to carry us through. So I'll go for Sale 22, Exeter 19. I think it'll be close, but I'm backing us to win this one. What about you?
I'm actually going to go for a Sale win as well, but I think it's going to be a little bit more high scoring. So 27-24 to Sale. But if you told me to flip that scoreline on its head and have Exeter winning by that margin, I think it's a 51-49. I think this is going to be a really good game, actually, and a really good early season test of Sale's sort of top four credentials, as well as Exeter's. James, what about yourself?
Oh, it's just a shame it's not on BT Sport. In fact, it's a shame we're not on BT Sport at all, almost forever. But I will go 29-22 to Sale. Like you, Lewis, it could easily be the other way around. It's still within a score. But I do think it's going to be slightly more high scoring. I haven't seen the weather forecast, but it seems to me, you know, Exeter are scoring more and so are we. And so let's hope that continues.
Fantastic. Well, we'll leave it there for this week. Thank you to everyone for listening. We hope you enjoyed a bit of midweek PRC coverage, and we'll be back with you after the Exeter game. So thanks very much, guys, and we'll speak to you next week.